Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 382. Returning guest to the show. It's going to be a fun one today. He does a lot of great work over at Run Pure Sports. He does DFS and season-long fantasy. He does a little bit of everything, and he's also a great presence on the good old Twitter. You can find him on Twitter at DraftCheat. Preet Christensen, how are we doing, man?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm a loyal listener. Love your show with Matt Flip Crazy, of course. So yeah. Happy to be on. And it's been a long time since we did a show. I think we did one, if my memory serves me right, we did a couple of shows, I think, before COVID, before 2020, before it got delayed. I think we're breaking down like our favorite, upside picks, if I recall correctly, at each position. And those went a little bit out the window, I think, when the season got delayed and the world turned on its head. But happy to be back, a year and a half later here.
Yeah, no, we've been trying to connect and make one work. It's just both our schedules are pretty bananas. So it's good to squeeze this one in. Those were fun shows, and I kind of want to do those again this next offseason. So yeah. I know listeners liked it a lot. Kind of a different angle in draft season. So we'll definitely do that. But today, you mentioned Bat Flip Crazy. He's on vacation yet again. He's usually the Tuesday show. So we bring in another ringer, basically, to talk about some NFBC, some FABs, some other fun stuff going on in fantasy. So we'll kick it off with some recent news just dropping about a half hour ago. Again, we kind of joked about it before the show. The Marlins made a trade. They acquired Joe Panik, and they sent Corey Dickerson and a reliever to Toronto. Any fantasy value to this besides Jesus Sanchez starting every day in left field for the Marlins?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the main takeaway, right? It frees up a little bit of room in the Marlins outfield for Jesus Sanchez. It'll be interesting to see if he can get going. I know it's been, a little bit of a slow start for him, right? He was crushing it in AAA 2020, kind of struggled when he came up. And, man, we're seeing a lot of these prospects struggle, both pitching and hitting. And, I've heard some people theorize, and I kind of agree with them at this point, that, maybe these top prospects who got to go to the alternate site last year, whereas, all the non-top prospects just got sent home. They didn't get to play any baseball in 2020. And they might be like a step ahead of their competition, like an extra step ahead, right? Obviously, the top prospects for a reason. And maybe their stats at AAA, both from a hitting and pitching standpoint, are inflated compared to their peers more than they normally would be. Then they make the jump to the big show, right? And it's just like a bigger jump than it would otherwise be in other seasons. Because, I mean, Jared Kelenic was awful. Even Wander Franco, he homered in his first game, but it's been a struggle since then. And then, man, I play a lot of DFS and do a lot of DFS stuff over at Run Pure Sports. I've fallen for these rookie call-up pitchers too many times at this point because I'm kind of used to these guys having some success when they typically came up, especially if they're dominating at the AAA level. So, yeah, it's been interesting from that standpoint. Obviously, that wasn't the question, but in terms of the value, I think Sanchez is the main thing for Miami. And then I don't know, is Dickerson really going to threaten the playing time of a guy like Randall Grichuk maybe in Toronto? Like, it could get a little bit crowded there. we just don't really know the motivations for the Blue Jays behind that trade. I don't know the reliever they got back, but I don't necessarily, you know, if Grichuk keeps hitting, I think he'll stay in the lineup most days. So I don't think this has a huge impact. Frankly, it's not like Dickerson was doing much anyway, right? So I don't think it has a huge impact on the fantasy landscape, at least.
Yeah, Dickerson still has a walking boot on, so it's going to be a little while to see what's going on there. But it's just interesting because if you look at their lineup, there's like no lefty presence really, except Biggio. So you could see some weird stuff with Gurriel or Grichuk. Gurriel's kind of been a disappointment overall this season compared to what we wanted. So we'll see. I'd still rather have Gurriel and Grichuk in the lineup 110%. But we'll see where that goes with Dickerson and just his on base skills. Can you imagine putting him at the top with like Semien in front of those big boys? Like that's just another, they score even more runs. But to your DFS point, because we both do a lot of DFS and I'm with you. I've fallen to those because year after year, if you see like a 4K pitch, you're like, okay, I'm going to play them. Go give me four or five innings and you know, you're going to get the points and go. And yeah, these guys are just dreadful. Like Jackson Kowar, like, holy crap. Like, what the hell happened there? So
it's a long list of them. Gilbert has Logan Gilbert for the Mariners. He's turned it around, but he was awful for the first couple starts. I mean, all the Royals guys that have pitched that have come up have been poor. It's been rough. So we'll see. I'm excited for a couple of Reds guys, Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, I think. Look awesome, you know. Hunter Green's throwing what 103 miles per hour, so you would think that would play at any level. But at this point, I'm like a little bit hesitant, and you know, I've got some fab saved up in a lot of leagues, waiting for some of these big call ups. But I'm, you know, less sure that they're gonna kind of contribute to my teams than I was maybe, you know, a couple months ago.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's been tough out there on the fab streets with these prospects. Yeah. Let's go to the Cubs real quick. Rizzo, another back injury. It seems to happen to him every like once a month or something.
Yeah,
he's back with day to day. But the main question I have for you, like, you're not dropping these guys. That's pretty simple. But you know, you got Rizzo's, you got Bryant's, you got Baez's. That just been a massive like struggle this season, and they were last year. We kind of put that to the, like, oh, we'll say it's COVID. And these guys are going to bounce back. And even Ian Happ, he went deep on Monday. He's been atrocious, hitting below 200. What are you doing with some of these guys that, like, you're not dropping the big dogs, but, like, is Ian Happ droppable? What are you doing with this Cubs offense?
Yeah, I was pretty excited about Happ to start the year, but I cut bait on him a while ago. So I saw some people, you know, tweeting that they finally cut him or finally benched him. Of course, he hits a home run on the first day. I jumped ship when he first got that injury, right? He had that nasty collision in the outfield. He wasn't hitting at the time, and I was just like, you know what? I don't know how long he's going to be out, but I'm moving on because I don't know, especially in, you know, in 12 team leagues, there's enough outfielders out there, I think. So I moved on from Happ where I had him if I could. The Cubs, I don't know. I wasn't really in on the Cubs to start the year for the most part, frankly. I mean, Rizzo, it's just the back injury doesn't seem like it's going away, right? Kind of him and Christian Yelich are just – the backs are tough. You can't – it's just – it seems like you play enough games in a row and all of a sudden, you know, your back probably slowly starts hurting more and more and then you're like, all right, I need a few days off here, right? Because you're not going to, you know, get surgery on your back if you don't absolutely have to. So it doesn't seem like these things are going away. Rizzo seems to be okay when he's in the lineup, but he does seem to me to be on kind of the downside of his career in terms of production, especially from a fantasy purpose. Baez, I mean, the production's been okay, right? Like the power and the speed, which is kind of why you draft him, has been great. Average, not so much. And then Bryant, I don't know what's been up with him. I mean, he started the year crushing it, right? It looked like it was a very bad fade. I wasn't in on Bryant at all. I don't have any shares across my 16, 17 teams. I haven't really been paying attention to him because, you know, I play all NFBC, so there's no trades. I don't have him. I guess paying attention a little bit for DFS, but I haven't really been in on him there either. Is he even – he's been slumping, I assume, if he's
– ice cold. The month of June has been absolutely atrocious when it comes to Chris Bryant. He's hitting a .114. So it's been pretty rough in the streets for Chris Bryant.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the like you get some pretty good matchups in that division, right? So you would think maybe they could turn it around, but we'll see. And of course the Cubs could potentially be sellers at the deadline. Yep. I think that was the assumption that everybody kind of had coming into the year. And then their bullpen has kind of been carrying them. I mean, Craig Kimbrell, wow, what a year from him and kind of the relievers around them. So not oftentimes you see a team's bullpen carry them. I suppose more often in this era of baseball than ever before, because we do see, I don't know, it's close to getting close to, I think, to 50% of the innings are thrown by a team's bullpen ultimately. So that's been the carrying unit for them, but that doesn't seem like a long-term recipe for success. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Cubs over the next, what, month or so? Do we have about a month, I think, before the trade deadline?
Usually it's like, I think it's August 1st, give or take, something like
that. Yeah, end of July, yep. So that'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting because, like you said, they're still contending. The Brewers are on a hot streak, so they've taken over. But the Cubs are there, so you don't see them selling. But before the season, they were all rumored to be getting sold. So,
yeah,
really interesting to see how that one goes. But this massive disappointment with this offense that I know some people are looking to cut some bait on this one. Ketel Marte goes back to the IL. This has just been ridiculous time and time again with him. You're holding him, obviously. You can't really drop him. But I wanted to bring up that Cole Calhoun's coming back again from an injury. Are you what level of interest do you have in Cole Calhoun? Because with as shallow as the waiver wires are these days, this could be quite intriguing.
Yeah, could be. I think especially in 15 teamers, he could be an outfielder that could help you in the power department. We'll see. I mean, I assume Arizona is going to kind of sell off all of the pieces that they can. Right? They've just been atrocious this season. If Calhoun comes back and starts hitting, I would assume he'll be traded as well. Right? I'm sure he can go to some contender and be a you know, a fourth outfielder, a pinch hitter off the bench. I think in the NL, you know, every team needs one of those. So that's what I assume would kind of happen to Cole Calhoun. Ketel Marte, I mean, this guy just can't stay healthy. You know, it's all the talent in the world there with Ketel Marte. I've been a fan for a number of years, but obviously pretty frustrating. He's another guy that I think they would probably trade if they could. And I think if he's healthy and performing, he'd get quite a haul for him, right? I mean, he's a impact player. Calhoun, I would assume would be a bench bat for a contender. Ketel Marte would step right in the starting lineup for almost any team if he's healthy. So I'm sure they're hoping for that. And then it does, or it should at least open up time, I think, for some of the Arizona youngsters, right? Guys like Josh Rojas, who's been leading off most of the time, almost all the time against right-handed pitchers, and platoon sometimes against lefties. But if they trade these guys, I think they would just try to see what they got, right? Let him hit against lefties too. Dalton Varsho, who is obviously has not performed whatsoever at the big league level, but with an extended run and catcher eligibility, but playing the outfield, like there's a lot of potential there. So if you can, you know, stash and hold him, that's interesting to me. So we'll see. I mean, Arizona obviously going to be sellers, right? There's just no question about it. So it'll be interesting to see what they can get, how many of these guys they can sell, and they're going to get even worse. So I think you are going to see some of these young guys just get a chance to play every day and see what they can do.
Yep, they'll be there every day. Christian Walker will be the veteran in that team. It'll be crazy to see how young they are. But, yeah, Varsho, massive disappointment. A lot of us were very excited with that catcher eligibility in the preseason. Obviously did not pan out. But I'd love to see a Ketel Marte trade to see what that return would be and where he could go, because that could be something. Like you said, he's a game changer for a lot of teams, and that would be – quite intriguing.
Is there any I haven't seen any word. Is it a serious hamstring injury, or is it more of like a, we don't want you playing through anything right now because we got to trade you?
I think it's more that, because they didn't put him on the IL initially, and they let him come back after like two games, and he kind of retweaked it real quick, and I think they just finally said, we're shutting you down for like 2 weeks. But we know they're going to be busy, because they sat Eduardo Escobar out like on Saturday because he was rumored to be traded, but he's played the last two games, so we'll see where that one goes. So they're active for sure. Just a couple quick notes. Brandon Nimmo is supposed to return this week, but he got pushed back a few days. Franmil Reyes will be back on Friday, most likely, and then Gene Segura is coming back as well. Speaking of Franmil Reyes, the Josh Naylor injury was just disgusting. That was nasty. Hard one to watch. Like, every time I see something like that, I think Napoleon Kaufman on Monday Night Football. Like, if you remember those days, that was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But with Naylor going down for the season, Oscar Mercado gets called back up. Are we falling for this trap again?
It's kind of hard not to, right? If you need speed, like the minor league numbers don't look that great this year. If I recall correctly, I think the batting average is pretty low. But I think the strikeout rate remains pretty good. Yeah, 15%, 16% strikeout rate. Walk rate is up. He's just not, in my opinion, a very good hitter. He's kind of a little bit like a Victor Robles for me, who I was really out on this year. Haven't really been on Mercado in the past. I mean, in 2019, he did hit 15 home runs, 15 steals, and 115 games. That's useful production for sure. So I think there's certainly some upside there. I mean, 9 steals and 45 games at the minor league level. Looks like he's pretty efficient on the base paths as well. So I do think they'll probably let him run. If he's playing every day, which maybe he will. We'll see with Franmil Reyes. coming back. But yeah, Cleveland, you know, they don't have a ton of talent, right? They've got some top end guys for sure, led by, of course, Jose Ramirez and Fran Mill. But other than that, a little bit deficient talent wise. So yeah, I think there's interest in Mercado just to see what he can do, right? I mean, if he gets hot, I think there's a chance he can be a big contributor. And it's tough to find steals out there, especially. I mean, a lot of my teams are kind of struggling a little bit in steals because I was super, super in on Adalberto Mondesi. So you're kind of banking on him running, and he just crushes every once a, you know, once a month when he gets to play for a week. But he's injured again, of course. So, yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on Mercado. And then, yeah, Fran Mill, I mean, he was crushing it before he went on the IL. I would assume he'll kind of pick up where he left off, right in the middle of that lineup, right next to Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, if I like Fran Mill, the DH, and come back. One guy I've been loving is, like you mentioned, Jose is good. Amed Rosario's been decent. Eddie Rosario's heating up right now over, like, yeah, last week. That's been good to see. But Harold Ramirez, like, you play DFS. He's cheap every day. He's been very productive. And I think he's going to stay there. So I'm wondering if Mercado's just kind of like a fourth outfielder right now.
Yeah.
It's a weird feel for him. But you never know if he gets streaky. And Cleveland could be sellers too. So you never know. Like, let Fran Mill play for a couple of days. They trade him or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, sometimes, at least in my opinion, people kind of overrate the playing time aspect. Oh, where is he going to play? Where is he going to play? It's like, I mean, in the outfield, if he's hitting, you know, like, he's going to get chances to play, of course. If he starts hitting, and you know he can play some decent defense in the outfield. They need him out there. They don't have very many good outfielders. Like, he'll play then if he can earn it. So sometimes you just gotta, you know, wait a week, but it doesn't take long. If a player's producing, they'll get in the lineup. So he's worth the speculative ad. You know, it doesn't mean you have to start him in the outfield the very first week to pick him up or anything like that. But yeah, was he picked up? I don't think he was picked up last week, was he?
No, I didn't see him picked up. No.
Yeah, so he'll be. If he has a good week, if he steals a couple bases, he'll be a popular ad, I think, especially in deeper leagues.
No doubt about it. Sonny Gray's coming back this weekend. That'll be hopefully good for a lot of teams looking for pitching help. But that's about it for the news cycle. Let's talk some fab. This has been a wild run. Like, the start of the season, it was, let's go crazy and spend all the money we have on closers. That's what everyone was doing. That's calmed down a bit. We got a little more of that this week, though. Overall on the season, though, how's your fab situation looking? Are you really short on money? You've been doing good with saving money. How's things going for you?
Pretty good for the most part. I do have one online championship where I blew it all early on the Blue Jays situation. I think I went – I can't even remember, like, who was first. You know what I mean?
Merriweather.
Yeah. I think Romano was first, and then Merriweather was next, and then it was back to – like, delete. I don't know. I think I blew like $600 chasing those guys. Typically, though, it's in pretty good shape because I drafted a ton of Liam Hendricks, who's been his typical awesome self. I drafted a ton of Kenley Jansen, who's been a rock all season. And then Hector Neris, who now has lost his closer job. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But he did produce, right? He was in my lineup kind of every day. Got, what, I think 11 or 12 saves out of him, which that's fine. You know, you move on from him. So, yeah, my save situation is good most places. And so I haven't had to chase the saves because, in general, chasing those saves hasn't really worked out. You know, I was tweeting a little bit in draft season saying, I think these closers who clearly have the job, guys like Hendricks, Jansen, you know, obviously the other top guys, Aroldis Chapman and Josh Hader, all these other guys, I think they're going to be more valuable than ever because it's not just that we don't know who – the closers are going to be for some of these teams is that they might not ever have one, you know? And so what happens is, you know, like in the NFBC format where I play, I know you play there as well. Like, you know, you get to start nine pitchers and you don't get to change them out for the week. And so if you get a halftime closer, right, like one of the Detroit guys or something like that, maybe Philadelphia might have that situation right now. We don't know for sure. You're talking, you know, maybe one save a week if they're splitting the role. And so even if they're getting some saves, you're sacrificing that spot where you could be using a two-star pitcher, right? And so it becomes a situation where even if they get some saves, if they're not getting them all and they're not that good of a pitcher anyway, you don't really want that guy filling up one of your spots because you're sacrificing potentially the other four categories, right? Wins, strikeouts, whip, and ERA, maybe if they're not a great pitcher, for like – maybe one save a week, and that's just not a winning formula. So it's been nice having these Jansen and Hendricks in particular for me on a lot of teams, because, you know, you just plug and play them, and then you can kind of stream your last couple pitching, starting pitching spots with good matchups or two starts, depending on what you're looking at for the week. So, yeah, we'll see with some of these situations that are coming up. But I know, you know, a lot of good players are kind of really deficient on saves. I think your normal podcast partner, Batflip Crazy, seems like he's kind of struggling in saves in a lot of leagues, which is frustrating. You know, I'm doing really well in TGFBI, but I did just lose Nara, so I'm down to one closer there. And that's like the one category where I can really gain at this point. Because, you know, when you're kind of up near the top of the overall, you're some categories, it's like it doesn't do me any good to get any more wins because, you know, I'm at the top. I don't even climb if I get a win necessarily. So we'll see if some of these situations shake out, but it's tough, man. It's a moving target, and it's a tough one to hit.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And I had the same philosophy in draft season. I had like my top six guys that I knew were locked into roles. I wanted at least one of those coming out of the draft. And then, like, I was big on Kimbrel. I didn't think he'd be this good by any means, but I felt he was locked into his job, and he got him later in drafts. Guys like that could come out for you. I had Neris circled and some other guys like that. So you kind of had to get lucky with some of those guys for sure. There's no doubting about that. But, yeah, I think it's more than ever. Like, it was kind of looking that way, and I think it's going to be that way next draft season. It'll be interesting when these guys do the early, like, DCs in November and December to see where these closers go, just for that kind of question to see if they're pushing them or not. But I think that's a very, very valid situation. It kind of feels, you're a fantasy football guy, it feels like the world of two running backs that most teams carry now. There's like four teams that have like a locked in back, mm-hmm. and now you're just committee everywhere. That's the bullpen. Like all these teams, like the Giants, I'm a Giants fan, and it's frustrating because you have Rodgers and McGee, and it works for them. Like, it totally works. So why would they change it for us? They don't give a shit about us. So it's like, it makes total sense. So.
Yeah, those are kind of the guys I'm talking about, where it's like, you know, you're getting half the saves, but like, you know, Rodgers, you're getting no strikeouts at all. Like, I know Rodgers, you know, for a while had a super low ERA and WHIP, but he's not a great pitcher. You know, I understand he can get the job done at times, but like, yeah, these big dogs, you know, Liam Hendricks, like you got like two saves on a doubleheader in one day. I'm like, here we go. Tony La Russa, good job, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. No other manager would do something like that. But let's go, Tony. Go sit on the
whiskey. Would be like, no way. When I saw when I saw the White Sox really in that second game, I'm like, La Russa might do it.
He might just do it. So we'll see how that goes. But let's talk about some of these potential committee messes that were paid for this last go around. With the Reds situation, you know, with Anton going on the IL and Sims going on the IL. Now it looks like Amir Garrett's getting his chance again. He was picked up for as high as $373 in the NFBC. But Brad Brock was also a popular target. He was an 89, as high as $89 in some leagues. Brock got a couple saves actually last week, which was interesting. Garrett looks like he has the better stuff. I was really not going heavy on either because this is what we've talked about basically. But if you had to go for one, which one did you want?
Yeah, I actually picked up Amir Garrett in, I think, three or four leagues for pretty cheap, you know, $1,000 NFBC budget. I think I got him for like between $20 and $30, so 2 to 3% of the total FAB. Seemed like a decent speculation because I did lose Neris a bunch of places, so I kind of replaced Neris with Garrett. I don't know if he'll hold on to the role. I think he could, right? He does have good stuff.
Great stuff.
Yeah, I think he's capable of running with it. I don't necessarily expect him to. I would be pretty surprised if Brad Brock was able to hold this role down for a number. You know, I think that was kind of my thought. I'm like, I'll take the guy. I don't know who it's going to be right now, but I think by the end of the week, you know, if Garrett locks one down and Brad Brock has I just don't really expect him to have that much success, to be honest. Yeah, maybe Garrett could run with it, but I don't know. I mean, the Reds seem kind of hesitant to really lock into one guy. We've obviously seen Sims and Antone there, you know, partly due to injury, you know, they've kind of missed out, but we'll see. I don't have like super high hopes for Garrett, but he seemed like a decent speculative ad just because at least there's the chance, right? At least there's a chance he could really kind of find his mechanics, start throwing more strikes. And we know he can get the strikeouts if he's on his game. So he seemed like the guy to add to me just in terms of, I just think way more upside. I just don't see it with Brad Brock.
Yeah, I'm with you. Garrett, I liked Garrett going into the season. I like Sims and Garrett. I was kind of willing to throw some dice out there at the end of drafts for them. I think Garrett's definitely the better pitcher. Like, to be honest, I watch a lot of baseball. I play a lot of baseball. Brock, I didn't even realize he was a valid save option. Yeah, until a couple of days ago. I was really surprised by that. So he might, you know, piss some people off. I think Garrett's the way to go on that one. I'm with you there. Philadelphia, now you mentioned Neris, which is a shame because he was productive. He was getting the job done, collecting the saves. But now we get Jose Alvarado added as high as $176. You get Archie Bradley added in some leagues as well. You know, Bradley got the contracts. People thought he'd be the closer. That's obviously not happening with Girardi in there. Bradley's been walking a ton of people, but so is Jose Alvarado. So if you had to pick your poison, looks like it's Alvarado's job for now, but you wouldn't be shocked if Bradley sneaks in there too.
I mean, Bradley, I know he's got a 4.2 ERA, but like his metrics are just brutal. You know, you look at any of the indicators. I don't use those as much. I kind of have my own stuff that I look at, but I mean, just those are all awful. You know, 1.6 home runs per nine. I mean, he's got almost as many walks as K's, as strikeouts. I just don't – I actually still think that Neris is their best option, to be honest. I'm maybe a little bit biased. I did drop Neris most places because I think it seemed kind of clear. They had a really weird sequence over the weekend where, like, Neris was, like, almost forced to get a save. I think it was on the second end of a doubleheader because the other guys weren't available. He got it, and then I think he blew it the next day or something like that. But they clearly, like, didn't want to use him, and they kind of declared that Alvarado was the closer. So I think Alvarado, again, maybe a bit of a similar situation here to Cincinnati, where I think Alvarado, you know, I mean, he's throwing 100 miles per hour from the left side. Like he could find it. Like the walks have been too much, but clearly a more talented pitcher than Archie Bradley. Archie Bradley, I just don't see it at all. I mean, if Alvarado can't do it, I think Neris would likely take it back from Archie Bradley. Because again, Neris, again, not a perfect pitcher by any means, but he's been pretty good. He's been okay this year. He's been a serviceable closer in the past. Like, he can obviously do the job reasonably well. I know Philadelphia fans would probably disagree. But if you just look at closers around the league, he's kind of, you know, middle of the pack, I think. So I wouldn't be surprised if Neris got this job back at some point. I can't roster Archie Bradley. I saw him going for a lot of money. It's like, man, this is one of those situations where it's like, I don't – even if he gets some saves – the damage he does to you, even if it's not right away, it's on his way out when he's still going to be in your lineup. One of these days, he's going to give up, you know, like seven earned runs in a week over like, you know, one and two thirds innings, something like that. So I couldn't roster Archie Bradley really in any league. I know, you know, some people have the philosophy or opinion that, you know, it doesn't matter. It saves or saves. It doesn't matter who gets them. I get it, but I just don't see it with Archie Bradley.
Yeah, neither do I. I wasn't a big Archie Bradley guy going into the draft season. I was a Jose Alvarado, and like I was going him late.
I had like Neris on like literally like 14 of my 17 teams. So
yeah, I looked at like all my like NFPC 50s and DCs yesterday, and I think I had Neris on like 80% of those teams. I'm like, yep, there he is, all going to the bench now. Fun stuff. But
we'll see you later, Hector. Especially in DCs. Yeah, well, you'll be back in there.
You'll be back. He will have a run again. He definitely will. Alvarado, I like, but yeah, Bradley's that guy. Like, he doesn't have it anymore. Like you said, I remember that Nationals Phillies like 20 something run combined game last week when they bring out Archie Bradley with the bases loaded to face Kyle Schwarber. And you're like, yeah, this is going to end well.
Yeah.
And so it's what he's doing when he's coming in. Archie Bradley, that game came in the sixth inning. That's all you need to know, people. That tells you their whole story of where that bullpen sits. So grab your Jose Alvarado until Hector Neris gets back in there for sure.
Yeah.
Talking young pitchers. And it kind of made me chuckle because when I saw the bids, Zach Thompson went as high as $152. Zach Thompson looked great in his last start. Like, there's no hiding that. The pedigree is somewhat there for Zach Thompson. I'm not the biggest of prospect guys. I enjoy them. I pay attention when they get closer to the big league levels. But, you know, he's pitched pretty well of late. Are you buying into Zach Thompson on this Marlins squad?
A little bit, yeah. I didn't actually pick him up anywhere. Maybe one or two teams I did, but I've been kind of set. My pitching staffs have looked pretty good, so I didn't really need someone. And I think he's got a tough matchup this week. So it was one of those situations for me. Pitchers like this, who I think have somewhat limited upside, I don't generally pick them up unless I'm going to use them that same week, right? Because things just change so quickly in the pitching landscape. And I like to have a bench full of hitters, so I don't miss any at bats in the, you know, in the Friday through Sunday when you can change out your hitters. So like on my best OC team, which I think is a contender for the overall, my bench is entirely hitters. I literally have a 9-man pitching staff, right? I have Kenley, I have Liam Hendricks at closer, and then I just stream that last ninth pitcher spot. And you know, I had a better option, I thought, than Zach Thompson. But I will say I have been kind of impressed with what he's done this year. I did use him in DFS in that last start. I think on Saturday he was pretty awesome in that one, and has looked good in general. The command looks good. He's got a good pitch mix. I know. You know, some of the advanced metrics for stuff doesn't necessarily think he's that great, but I'm not sure if those take into account that he's 6'7", right? And some of these guys that are actually like Bailey Ober a little bit for the Twins as well. Some of these big, tall dudes, they kind of mess with hitters to some degree. And I mean, Thompson was dominating at AAA, right? I mean, only 15 innings, but a super high K percentage and low walk rate. And now he's doing the same thing in the big leagues. And, you know, he does get to pitch half his games in Miami, which is a great place to pitch. Miami pitchers in general have done pretty well. And he looks like a just the eyeball test watching him pitch. He looks like a guy who kind of knows what he's doing out there. So, yeah, I think Thompson can be serviceable. You know, you got to have, I think, somewhat of a quick hook with him, right? If things go south, you just kind of move on. But I think there's some upside here. Yeah, I think he was worth the pickup if you needed some pitching this week for sure.
Yeah, especially with Miami, and they don't really have a lot of depth to go with, so they're going to let him run unless things go bad. He's gone five or more innings in two of his last three starts. He's only given up three runs all season, and he has six or more Ks in three straight, so he's starting to really get it going. I don't mind that at all. You mentioned the matchups. He's got at Atlanta this week and then home versus the Dodgers next week. So we'll really see how things are going for him.
That's what I looked at, and I'm like, I don't think I'm going to use him. I'm not pitching this guy at Atlanta. You know what I mean? And then even if he did well there, would I really want to use him against the Dodgers? If he didn't do well against Atlanta, he might be a drop candidate. So I just didn't see spending a bunch of fab on a guy that I couldn't use this week and had two tough matchups coming up.
Yep, no doubt about it. Now a fun one. This is round two this season going up and back from the minor leagues for one Keston Hira. Yeah. For those that listen to the show, obviously follow Vlad Sedler. He's been banging that drum in his articles, which is a great article. He's been banging it, and right now it's looking good. Since his return, he's hit three home runs. He's hitting .353 with only a .300 BABIP. I'll give him that. Like he's somehow doing something here, and he's only striking out 25% of the time, which I think is the biggest kicker. I know it's a super small sample. Like, don't get me wrong, but there's at least some glimmer of hope. Maybe, or are you just like, no, it's coming back to not happening for you?
I mean, it could happen. I kind of have my doubts, to be honest. You know, I know the power has been there, and I don't mind the pickup at all, right? Like, he's clearly got upside. I mean, if things turn around for him, there's no question he's going to hit for power and maybe a little bit of speed, although it doesn't look like the speed component's really coming for him, although kind of hard to know this year because he's just never been on base so far. But, yeah, I mean, I don't mind the speculative ad. My hunch is that these guys that, you know, you mentioned striking out 25% of the time, like, okay, you can survive that. You get up to 35%, and it's not like this is some precipitous decline in strikeouts. You know, it's just a little bit so far. I think he's had pretty good matchups. I tend to think the strikeouts are going to stay above 30%. It's a hard thing to overcome. It just is, you know. You're just so prone to slumps. Obviously, the Brewers have shown that they're willing to send him down. I think if he struggles again, and I know Vogelbach got injured, which kind of solidifies it, or would seemingly solidify his playing time if he hits. I mean, if he's striking out 35% of the time, you know, what's his rate on the season? 37%? It just doesn't work. So maybe he's figured it out. I kind of have my doubts, to be honest.
Yeah, I was skeptical. Like the first go around, I'm like, okay, I'll get him for cheap in a 12 team or whatever. And that didn't work. So I dropped him again right away. I didn't get him this go around. I got outbid for him. I just didn't want to break the bank for him this time. So far, so good. We'll see. There's no doubting the overall hit tool. It's just a matter of can he put bat to ball with, and that's the million-dollar question with Keston here. So we'll wait and see on this one. But we talked about prospects that have been kind of disappointing overall, like even Jared Kelenic, Wander Franco. You mentioned all these guys that I wouldn't be shocked if September is going to be beautiful for them. Like that's how things work. But Daz Cameron was a guy that I was like, okay, I'm going to be skeptical on. Like, we saw him at the cup of coffee last year. Wasn't great. The pedigree is obviously there. He's been up and down so far in his short run, but it's been much better of late, if that makes sense. Hit in the middle of the Tigers lineup, not the best lineup, but he's there. And they've been sneaky productive, actually. I won't be like completely downing them. but we're seeing some power and speed with him. Are you buying in on a guy like Daz Cameron?
Yeah, I did pick up Daz Cameron a couple places, I'm high on his teammate Akil Badu. We could probably talk about those guys together.
I know that's why you're that was the GIF in the tweet because I know you're the Badu guy.
Yeah, I was in on Badu from the get go. I drafted him on a couple teams. Yeah, drafted him and have actually picked Badu up. I have him on most teams at this point. Yeah. So to Daz Cameron first. A lot of talent here, I think, you know, and I would actually maybe potentially say perhaps more upside than Keston Hira because you have the speed component, I think, for Daz Cameron. The Tigers have running. Their offense has been productive. I think they, don't quote me on this, but I think this might be their second consecutive winning month, like winning record month. So, they're playing better. It looks like Daz Cameron, like I think he has the potential to be just a straight up every single day player, right in the middle of that lineup. If he can keep, you know, he needs to keep the strikeouts down as well. But it was only 17% at AAA in those 85 plate appearances, at 28% right now at the big league level. So that's a bit concerning. But he has legit speed. It looks like the defense is pretty good in the outfield. Three stolen bases and three attempts so far. The Statcast looks pretty good. So he did hit a ball 112.6 max EV, which means you got some power, right? You got some pop in that bat. He can go the opposite way. I've seen him go to right center field. So I like those guys that can kind of spray the ball all over the place. You can't get shifted, right? If that's the case, that helps the BABIP, of course, which he's had, I think, pretty high BABIPs for most of the stops at his minor league career and a 12% barrel rate so far. So I like what I've seen from him. Again, I think this is one that could easily go south, you know, at any time, but potential, right? I think you're looking at an upside of, you know, maybe something like, I don't know, 10 home runs, 15 steals, and 250, you know, the rest of the way, which that plays, especially in a 15-teamer. So, yeah, I do think he was an interesting pickup, although I do still like his teammate Akil Badu a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I was with you. I grabbed Cameron in a couple leagues. So I was again not trying. It's that time of the year. I'm not breaking the bank on anybody. Like listeners of the show
We've seen those. Those bids are going way down. Yeah. You know,
like
you
I just looked on the NFBC. Kazimer went as high as $57. I don't remember the last time we saw like a kind of quote unquote big name go for that cheap as the highest bid in all of the NFBC leagues. So that says a lot right there, but I'm with you. I think there's a lot to like there with him, and they have no reason not to play him unless he really hits the skids. So that's the beauty of it. But you mentioned his teammate Akil Badu, and it's just been a tale of two Badus is the way I look at it. The first one we saw, this power guy, average is wonky, all this kind of stuff, kind of gets set back to sit on the bench for a bit, figure it out. And they always say, you know, the league will make an adjustment to the rookie needs to make the adjustment back. Now he's made an adjustment, but the power's gone. But the on-base skills are through the roof. Just the month of June alone, is walking 14% of the time, striking out less than 17%. Like a 423 OBP is outstanding. And he's stealing bases, but there's no power right now. So what's your thoughts on Badu?
Yeah, so a few things. So the power, I know it hasn't been there. It's going to come back, right? Your power just doesn't go away. He's clearly changed his approach, right? For the better, clearly. He was striking out too often. The power was obviously there early. He had some really impressive opposite field home runs. And, you know, I think it seems clear. I haven't, read this or seen an interview, but he's like, okay, I got to make more contact, right, to stay in the lineup. And he's drawn walks, right? I mean, you mentioned, over the last 30 or so days, I think he's, third or fourth in the entire league in on-base percentage, which is just crazy for a 22-year-old rookie who didn't play ever above A ball and was kind of playing sporadically to start the year. To be able to make that adjustment in the first place makes me confident that he can, you know, slowly maybe, okay, I can know how to make contact now. And then maybe, you know, maybe his pitch recognition is improving. Maybe get him to himself into some better counts and then start swinging hard again, right? Because it seems like he's kind of – it's weird to say sell out for contact, but it does seem like that's kind of what he does, and it's working for him. He's leading off, I think, every day now against right-handed pitching. And when you give him – he's at a 13% walk rate on the year. That's been even higher over the last few weeks. And he's stealing bases, right? 9 steals, just 2 caught stealings on the year. He did have a 24 steal season in 2018 in just 113 games. If you got that high on base percentage like he does and you're stealing bases and you're leading off, you're probably going to get a lot of steal opportunities, right? He's getting on base 42, 43% of the time to start the game. He's going to be running a lot there. So, again, steals are hard to find. It seems like he's going to keep on providing them. I think the power will return. I know, you know, people have some concerns about that, but I think maybe people just see the name Akil Baddoo. He doesn't seem like a power guy, right? He seems like a speedster, just the name of him. And then you throw in the fact that he hasn't hit much for power, but I know the power is there. I've seen it. So, yeah, I think he has a ton of upside given the adjustments that he's made already. And, you know, I think the Tigers are maybe going to trade what Robbie Grossman, I would maybe expect possibly to be on the move, and kind of any other pieces. And listen, if Baddoo keeps us up 420, 430 on base percentage, you know, he's got a 129 WRC plus. He's been 29% above league average. It's just in terms of offensive production. Eventually they're going to start letting him hit against lefties. You've got to find out. I mean, he's 22 years old and he's just producing. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if he started getting at bats against lefties. The numbers so far look horrible, but it's very few plate appearances. They've really protected him against lefties. If he keeps producing like this against right-handers, it would be crazy for them not to let him try to hit lefties. So, and who knows if he can do it. We've seen him make a big adjustment so far. So I'm very, very high on Akil Baddoo and excited to see what he can do rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I like him quite a bit as well. I have him and Daz Cameron were some of my more popular ads this week, just for multitude of reasons that we just talked about here. And the on-base skills, the adjustments he made, I'm very, very excited to see how that develops. And if anything, you got a guy like Miguel Cabrera sitting down on the bench with you. He's going to get you to keep tweaking your swing to get that power back. I wouldn't put that one past him either. So
yep.
Yeah, just keep getting on base, steal bags, score runs. Like you said, that offense is getting better. If people go to like the team splits pages and on Fangraphs and look like 30 days roll, like stuff like that, this team's actually been pretty darn good. So it'll be surprising to many people out there that don't see it on the daily. A couple more here. An interesting one that popped up over the weekend. Kyle Moeller of the Atlanta Braves. The Braves are just decimated with injuries in that starting rotation. So Moeller got the call, and he's been pretty good the last two times out there making these starts. He had 9 Ks against Cincinnati on 5 innings of no runs allowed. So he was quite popular as ads this week, also as high as $71. Are you in on a guy like Kyle Moeller?
I'm kind of lukewarm on him. I do think there's some upside there. So we did see 31 innings out of him this year at the AAA level, and the strikeouts were there, but the walks were also a huge problem for Moeller. I like kind of the, you know, the non-stat parts of him. I mean, a 6'6 lefty who can throw 94, 95. He actually, watching him pitch, he reminds me a lot of Trevor Rogers, who's been just fantastic for the, you know, just a giant lefty who's got some gas from the left side, hides it pretty well. So, yeah, I don't know how often he was picked up. I kind of wish I would have grabbed a couple shares, just speculative shares. I don't know if he's still available. I might be into that. I think there's upside there. It's just, can you harness the control? I'm generally pretty hesitant to take the rookies coming up that couldn't throw strikes consistently at the minor league level, because my assumption usually is that, you know, at the minor league level, like, I assume you're trying to almost never walk anybody, right? You're not like pitching around guys. Sure, you get to the big league level, you've got to do that a little bit more, but when you should be, if you're coming up to the big leagues, you should have been able to throw strikes at the minor league level. So I'm always worried that these guys are, you know, the big league hitters are going to be able to fall off more pitches, extended bats, and the walk rate's going to be just a huge problem. So I don't know if that'll happen for Moeller. I mean, some of the indications certainly look like it. I know he's been solid these last two starts, but first pitch strike rate, a metric that I like to use a lot, because generally pitchers are trying to throw a first pitch strike, right? Nobody's ever really trying to throw a first pitch ball because you're not really trying to get a chase. He's at 39% and 33% in these last two starts, which is just you can't survive like that. So we'll see. I mean, maybe they'll figure something out, right? I mean, it's possible he'll make an adjustment or they'll figure something out with those mechanics to get him more consistent. I think there's upside here for sure, but I'm scared to start him right now, which is kind of why I didn't pick him up. I'm guys that I'm unwilling to start, I generally kind of leave on the wire to let them blow up someone else's ratios, because I'm pretty cautious with my ratios. I don't like to I don't like to start these wild pitchers too often, but I do like what I see from him in terms of talent for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on the ratio comments. That's what started a fun Twitter debate last night. So that was part of my issue there with the whole situation. So I didn't grab Mueller either. He's picked up in 175 leagues. He gets Miami at home this week, and then he's at Miami next week. So if he pitches well this week, he's going to be a very popular ad next week going into Miami. We want to monitor for sure.
Yep.
There weren't a lot of great two-start options this week, and for me, I could be wrong. If you were going to make one on the waiver wire, Caleb Smith at least kind of checked the boxes there. The walks are horrible. Like, they're just really, really bad, but the strikeouts are there. He's been effective since joining the rotation about four or five starts ago. He's been pretty darn good overall for this Arizona team, and you go in to face St. Louis to start off the week. That's been just horrible versus lefties. So are you interested in a guy like Caleb Smith, or is this kind of a guy that could mess your ratios up as well?
Yeah, I really liked him. I had him on a lot of teams. I think that was in 2019 when he had a really good run for the
Marlins.
For the Marlins for a while. I think it ended maybe due to injury. I can't recall for sure, but I'm kind of a fan of him in general. Man, I'm hesitant to roster Diamondbacks pitchers in general. Like, yeah. I mean, are you ever going to get a win? They never win games. They have like the worst bullpen ever. They're going to be trading all their good players. The defense is just horrible behind. I mean, did you see the Vogelbach play?
Oh yeah. It's like literally I could have probably ran. My fat ass could have ran and tagged him out before he got there. And they just sat there and watched him.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, this team is just dead in the water. And so, I don't think Caleb Smith is some, you know, such a talent that he can like overcome and like be an ace for the staff. I just don't see that. Even the last three games, I know the results have been good, but a swinging strike rate below 9% in all three of those games. And that's, you need that from Caleb Smith, because he's going to give up home runs, right? He throws a lot of high fastballs. We'll see against the Cardinals tonight. I actually like the Cardinals stack a little bit, those right-handed power bats against him. I think he's going to give up home runs. And if the swinging strikes aren't there for him, I think it's going to be a rough go. So I did consider him as a two-start option, but I got a little gun-shy and didn't pull the trigger. I think I might have grabbed him maybe one place. But, yeah, I'm a big two-start guy. I'll chase the two starts all the time for sure. But this one made me a little bit scared. I think there's some upside there, but I think it's mitigated by his team situation.
Yeah, I guess this year after the early two-start blowups, the Gombers and everything, I'm just like, I'm just going to kind of take it easy for now. Like, and I've kept Gomber all season, and he's been great until he got hurt. So at least I believed in what he had. I just didn't work out.
So I'm in one of my leagues is a main event qualifier. So you got to get first out of 15 to get anything, right? Second gets you nothing. I think I was sitting in sixth place coming into yesterday, and I had enough saves and everything. And my two worst categories were K's and wins. So I was kind of to the point where I'm like, okay, I got to start chasing these categories down with two star pitchers. So I was not a fan of Matt Manning whatsoever. No,
we're going here.
I was not a fan of Matt Manning whatsoever. Just in general, I stacked against him yesterday in DFS. Yeah. And I was not also a fan of Garrett Richards, who I tweeted after his last start that he is absolutely done without the sticky stuff. And we saw him struggle again, and his spin rates were way, way down. But in this league, and this is the only league I did it, I picked them both up, started them both. And I might be clicking the hide team button on the main event qualifier team now. I might just give up on – no, I won't give up quite yet, but that was might be the nail in the coffin for me in that league, but it just kind of had to go for the upside sometimes.
But see, there's the conversation that makes sense. That's why it's always hard on Twitter, you know, to like portray the conversation properly. In a league where literally only one person out of 15 wins, you have to do these things. Now, there's some that say, okay, you have the overall, you have this, you have that. I get it, but we still have three more months of the season. Is it worth blowing it up with like
this?
What has Matt Manning shown? He doesn't go deep into games. He doesn't strike guys out. He doesn't like so many things he does not do. What did he show?
it was a poor decision on my part. I knew
but your situation is different. I'm talking like in the grand scheme of things. What is he showing you to take the chance?
No, I was not anywhere close to starting him on any of my OCs or main event or anything like that. It was just this one specific league where you got to get first. I needed strikeouts. I needed wins. Two starts, decent matchups. I'm like, all right, I'll roll the dice here. If it doesn't go well, I'm actually okay with that because he's going to blow up teams in the other 17 leagues that I have, and I won't have many of those places. So I'm like, I didn't really even care that he got blown up. Like, it might have improved my overall ROI that he got blown up because I probably wasn't going to win that league anyway, right? So it wasn't the end of the world. Rolled the dice. Didn't work out. Wasn't surprised about it. And, we'll move on.
You basically did the old hedge stack in your main event qualifier.
Yeah, pretty much.
couple more real quick here. The Tigers situation, Fulmer back to the IL. So now it looks like Cisnero and Soto both been kind of decent off and on, but it seems like it's going to be a back and forth mess. So any interest in this one?
No, this kind of, I mean, a little bit of interest. I didn't pick up either of these guys. Soto's been good recently. He is another guy with good stuff. It's kind of odd, you know. I mean, Soto, Alvarado, and Amir Garrett, kind of similar pitchers, right? Obviously very talented lefties. They all throw hard. If you watch them on their good days, you're like, holy shit, this guy is like looks like Aroldis Chapman out there. You watch them on their bad days, and it's not that. Seeing a lot of guys, you know, you're watching it's like the Simpsons GIF where they're like marching around the bases because they can't throw any strikes. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to play matchups in Detroit. I actually kind of liked Fulmer to hold that job. I've liked what I've seen from him when he's been healthy, but he can't stay healthy. You know, he comes back for like 2-3 games and then something else. What is he has a neck strain now, I think. If you really need saves, I think these guys are okay to take a shot on. But again, I think this is going to be one of those roles that's shared between them. They're not that effective of pitchers anyway. It's not that great of team anyway. And I think most likely, you know, the situation ends up in frustration for you with these guys. So I think they're more 15 team guys. I get it. Some people desperately need saves. You know, I guess I'm fortunate to be in a situation where that's not really me. So these guys are kind of off my radar, but I get it. If you need saves, you got to roll the dice sometimes.
And the moral of the story is don't break the bank for these committees. Just don't. Yeah. I get so sick when I see a guy spends like 3 digits and higher on any of these guys. It's like, no, that's not going to come.
I don't get sick. I get pleased. Please deplete your.
Well, yes, true. It made me feel a lot better about this. That is true. But it's like, oh man, yes, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Let's talk about some of your leagues this year. TGFBI is one you're doing very, very well in, of course. I was doing well until about 2 days ago. I was like, literally, as we were talking about it, I've been pretty much hanging out in second because first place is running away with the league right now. Long ways to go, but I was hanging around second, like around 50 to 60th overall. I was kind of hanging out. Now I've dropped down to fifth. I'm 99th overall. So much fun. But that's the beauty of this tight-knit top. But I know you're doing pretty good. Like, you know, I don't have to scroll very far to see you in fourth place right now. How are things going for you there?
Good, yeah. Fourth place overall in the TGFBI out of what? There's 435 teams, so a good one there. I will confess to having some bitterness. I do mostly online championships, which are 12 teamers. Then I did one main event, which is a 15 or two 15 teams. One is the main event, which is obviously the $1,700 buy-in where. My first two picks were Mondesi and Bellinger. So that team is struggling. It started to climb up a little bit, but the struggle there. And then this other 15 team, which is TGFBI, which I'm in, you know, fourth overall. So I wish those were switched a little bit because it's obviously the free league. I did get in the side pot, so maybe we can win some money there. And obviously it's a fun league to play in, right? You see all these industry names up near the top. So, yeah, I'm happy I'm doing well here. Had a pretty good core.
You have Vladito and Fernando Tatis, for Christ's sake. Like, and Otani. I don't know how many teams I've seen that. That's insane.
Yeah, core of Vladimir Guerrero, Ozzy Albies, Fernando Tatis, Brian Reynolds, Shohei Otani, Clayton Kershaw.
That'll do it.
Carlos Rodon. It's a stacked team. It's hard to.
And you're second place in your league, which is like hilarious to me.
Yeah. Fourth overall, and the guy that's in 14th overall is actually first. So I think I'll run him down. Got some decent stashes. I've been healthy, so I got Bobby Witt and Eloy on the bench, waiting to come out for some reinforcements. Hopefully at some point, Sixto as well. So yeah, I'm obviously pleased with this team. I think I got Vlad, and I can pull up the draft board here because I got Vlad. super late. I actually wasn't, unfortunately, all that in on Vlad, but I got him, yeah, in the fifth round, second pick. So that would have been pick 62 for Vladimir Guerrero. So shame on you, league mates. Shame on you, Todd Zola. You passed on him at pick 56. You should have done better. George Springer, come on now. You chose the wrong Blue Jay.
Yeah, Vlad Guerrero, like, I didn't want to pay the second round price at all, or even third round, but man, you're getting him in the back end where you were. That's it's pretty nice. That's the beauty. It's the beauty of certain leagues, man. Just certain things change. That's a gift right there.
First seven picks here for me in a 15 teamer: Tatis, Kershaw, Albies, Corbin Burns, Vlad Guerrero, Raisel Iglesias, Teoscar Hernandez. So that doesn't suck.
What's your thoughts? You mentioned Corbin Burns, with like we've seen things change a little bit the last few times. How, like, are you nervous, or is it like he'll be okay?
I have Corbin Burns on a ton of teams, and the foreign substance stuff, it's been a big deal for DFS, obviously baseball in general. Yeah. It's annoying as a season long guy, because you can't do anything about it, really. You know, it's like, we didn't really know this was going to happen. There were rumors of it, and I downgraded guys like Cole and Bauer a little bit because I was a little bit concerned about it. So I don't have any Garrett Cole or Trevor Bauer this year, which looked rough and now looks pretty good, especially in Garrett Cole's case. Mm-hmm. But Corbin Burns, to go back to him, I mean, I still think he's going to be a good pitcher for sure. Like, one of those bad starts was in Colorado, which I kind of saw that coming, because he's a guy, like, his number one pitch is his cutter, you know, which is it's kind of a hybrid between a fastball and a breaking ball. We see generally breaking balls don't work in Colorado anyway. Then you throw in the fact that it's not spinning quite as much as it was with the loss of, I'm guessing he was, you know, he and Woodruff, I think both were probably using the good stuff, right? The spider attack, right. I think. So yeah, I don't think he's going to be as effective. I think all these guys that lost significant spin on their pitches are going to take some sort of step back. I think it's really hard to quantify how much of a step, and I think it's going to vary from pitcher to pitcher. But Burns still has premium velocity, right? Like, even with, like, he had by far, in my opinion, the best cutter in baseball. Now he still might have the best cutter in baseball. It's just not by far the best one. So I still expect him to pitch well. Of course, there are perhaps inning concerns coming up down the road, although with Milwaukee playing well, I don't know. I kind of think some of that stuff's overblown. Like, are you really going to – if you're competing for a division title, are you really going to say, just as an arbitrary number, your pitcher feels fine, right? He's healthy, and you're like, yeah, you can't pitch anymore?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of doubt that's going to happen. I mean, these teams are competitive. The players are competitive.
Well, and they can't do it. They can't do it with him and Freddie Peralta. They got to, because they're both going to be on innings limits, and they need them both.
Yeah.
So yeah,
these guys. You know, Burns is like Burns, especially Peralta.
He's a big dude.
He just looks like a star. I think he might be good.
He's like a Lance Lynn type. He's a Lance Lynn type. Just go out there and throw.
I kind of think they're just going to let him go. You know, maybe and he missed innings early on, right? Because he was on the COVID IL for a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I don't know. I think if he keeps pitching well and Milwaukee keeps playing well, I think they'll let him go. So we'll see with Corbin Burns. I do think he's going to take a step back. I still expect him to be a top 15 starting pitcher. At least I think he is right now. I think Burns will keep going pretty well.
Well, and something you mentioned there, and I know you've talked a lot about it, and I've talked about it on shows with the sticky stuff. It's like, it's universal, and obviously not everyone is using it, but a lot of people, like most guys are using something along the line. So it's not like there's like a set metric on who's going to drop more than others, but there's kind of going to be a wave throughout the whole thing where everyone's going to kind of take a step back. You'd think like there's going to be some good starts, some bad starts. You're seeing guys get more hittable. They're still getting their strikeouts. Like, look at Bauer now. He's giving up home runs like they're going out of style, but he's still getting strikeouts and going six innings. So it's one of those kind of, you know, hit and miss type deals. It might not be the shutouts for, but, you know, there's only a few guys like DeGrom. If he can ever stay healthy, he looks fine. Scherzer looks fine. I wouldn't mess with him at all. But there's a few guys that, you know, just Cole's like the biggest, like, oh shit. It's really, really bad. And I even debated benching him this week. And like, I haven't been like one league where I thought I'd be cute and take him instead of DeGrom first. And I'm regretting that immediately right now. Immediately. So that's
I benched Burns in Forest Coors Field start. So I did pull that trigger, which was a weird thing to click Corbin Burns out of your lineup, but hey, you know, which it did not work out at all, by the way. Tucker Davidson, the Braves lefty, had a 2-start week, and I think he got hit around and then had an elbow injury like an inning into it. So I was like, okay, lucky not. At that point, I figured Burns was going to go into Colorado and throw a, you know, a complete game shutout just to punish me for my stupid decision. But thankfully, he didn't. He didn't hurt me too bad.
So going forward, this we're pretty darn close to the halfway mark as we're looking at things. A lot of teams are playing 81 games now and everything, so we're getting really close. What's your approach going forward? You talked about like your qualifier, you're going for broke basically. In other leagues, you're still keeping it safe. It's obviously dependent on where you're at in the standings and what stats you're going for. That's very clear. But how are you approaching the rest of the way here, like an NFBC, like you said, where there's no trades? So you have to be creative on the fab, basically.
Yeah, you know, I think especially in leagues that you're doing well in, and you know, I have one online championship that is TGI. I think TGFBI is my best team, but in terms of like a decent money league, this online championship is the one that I'm kind of really hoping can make a true run at it. You know, I do have the Fab Hammer, so I'm in first in the, or not for, second in the league, you know, 100th overall or so with a fully healthy team. Other than actually, this team has Mondesi on it.
Oh, wow. And you're still 100th overall? Man, if he can come back and give you like 2 months.
Because the thing is, I've like kind of randomly clicked through teams, and I don't think – I bet maybe one or two at most ahead of me have Mondesi on them. Right?
That's the DFS player in you right there. Like, so, how do I jump the stack?
Yeah, so if he goes off, right, if he starts stealing bases – and stolen bases is my worst category in this in the overall. So Mondesi was my second pick. I had the third overall pick. And I picked Juan Soto, who has been a massive disappointment. So I'm sitting right around 100th overall with Soto giving me almost nothing and Mondesi giving me almost literally nothing. And so obviously the rest of the team's been fantastic. I mean, I've picked up Brandon Crawford, Tyler O'Neill, just like, you know, just a long list of guys that have produced. So I'm really hoping Mondesi can come back and produce. But, man, he's so frustrating. So we'll see. And then Soto, man, what's the deal with him? Because you look at like his Statcast page, it's hard to find much there that he's doing wrong, but he is not producing whatsoever right now.
I'm 100% with you. We have a listener question. I think he's one of your buddies, but I have a
– it's literally my brother, so yeah.
Yeah, I had a feeling because he's asking a lot of questions I knew were like straight to the core of the situation. Yeah. And but I have another listener. I'm surprised I didn't get one this time around, but it's like every day Soto has a bad day, I get a tweet like, hey, why is he the biggest disappointment in all of baseball? And I just get over it, over.
I don't even get excited for his at-bats anymore.
No, there used to be must-see TV, and now it's like, oh,
he's going to ground out for a second.
Yeah, he hit into a double play the other night. I'm like, you got to be shitting me right now. Like, what are you doing, man? But yeah, you look at the Statcast, you look at his rest of season projections, if you want to believe in those. They're all showing like the Juan Soto we know and love is going to come out and just keep going. It's so hard to believe, but the one thing you said there is you took Soto third and Mondesi second, and you're still 100th overall and second in your league. That part I wanted to take home because – this guy that trolls me with the Soto stuff basically said, I took him third overall and it ruined my entire season. My league's over. I said, no, that's a you problem because you didn't do good the rest of your team. Like you can survive Soto and make it work. But yeah, if you can get Soto to bounce back and you get Adalberto Mondesi to bounce back, you can make a hell of a run. That's for sure.
Yeah. So Real Muto, Will Smith are the catchers. Picked up Colin Moran, who of course got beamed in his first at bat of the week, and or maybe hurt his hand this morning. But yeah, Edmund Crawford, Kyle Seager, Juan Soto, Winker, Tyler O'Neill, Badu, Jordan Alvarez, Josh Rojas, and then a really good staff: Kershaw, Barrios, Trevor Rogers, Kyle Hendricks, and then Hendricks and Jansen closer. So pretty stacked team. I just need my two studs to come back and produce. So I'm excited about this one. But it's annoying to be doing this well and having your – I mean, Juan Soto seemed like the safest pick.
I'm 100% with you, man.
And I passed on Jacob deGrom at pick 3 because, you know, Tatis, Acuna went 1-2. I went Soto over deGrom. I mean, I ain't going to do the math to find out where this team would be if it had deGrom on it instead of Soto, but it would be a lot higher up, that's for sure.
I was big on Soto coming to the year, too. I would have Like, who wouldn't have been?
I don't like regret the pick, really.
No, I don't regret it either.
I wish he would perform, but
I don't regret it either. It's because people go, well, you drafted him for his 2020. Like, no, I knew he's regressed from that. But what he did last year was so insanely good, even some regression was going to be an elite, elite player.
If you look at what he produced at age, you know, 22 still, I think, maybe?
Yeah, he's 22.
Historically great, you know, like with the true, like, all-time greats. I don't think anybody predicted this. So he did have that shoulder injury. Remember that a couple weeks into the season? Yep. He missed, I think it was the minimum time. It apparently was only hurting him when he threw the ball. Yeah. And the hitting was fine. I don't think he's missed a game. He's healthy. I think he's healthy. Like, you watch him hit, he's still doing his, you know, his little waggle in the box. Like, if he was hurting, I think you would see some, I don't know, some sign of it where – so – it's frustrating, but I still think he's going to turn it around. Would you have faith in Soder to get it going again? I think he will.
Yeah, I think he will. Guys like Freddie Freeman got off the bad starts. Yeah. You look at their StatCast pages and stuff. He's slowly getting it going. Sometimes, like, it's cliche and it's just bad analysis, but some of these really good players just believe in the back of the baseball card. Unless they're hurt or something, they're going to come back and be the guy you thought they are, barring just something really crazy.
And this, maybe a cop-out, but there's no question Soto's been like among the most unlucky hitters in baseball. If you look at some of the you know, expected batting average, expected slugging, which again, those things aren't necessarily predictive. But when it's Juan Soto and those numbers all look like the exact same pretty much that he had last year, I mean, there's barely anything there. If you look at like a few more ground balls, sure, and like the barrel rate's slightly down, but like the max EV.
It's his best of his career.
Yeah, so he looks totally healthy. He's not missed a game, even throwing from the outfield. He looks totally fine. So I'm hoping he'll go on a massive tear here, but it's having Soto instead of Schwarber over these last 3 weeks has just been like, man, come on.
Yeah, I feel you. It's frustrating. It's like you're not taking him out of the lineup. You're just praying. Go on a Schwarber-like tear.
I'm thinking about benching him just for like a 1 weekend just to get him going. You know, like, come on.
Buddy. Motivate him. Yeah. go grab some pine and go think about your problems. Another question from, I believe you said it's your brother. This is another fun tongue-in-cheek one, but it's interesting. Kyle Gibson or Garrett Cole rest of the season?
I've been a Kyle Gibson guy for a long time, so it's been fun to see him get going because he's punished me in the past. Man, I don't know how long Kyle Gibson can keep this up. Like, he's been just fantastic, obviously, from a fantasy perspective. I actually think this is a weird one. I think he was one of the most unlucky. I think he's more or less the same pitcher that he's always been. I think he was kind of one of the most unlucky pitchers for the last couple of seasons. And this year, obviously running super hot. I mean, he's just not a 2 ERA pitcher. There's just no question. He did introduce a new cutter this year, which I think, you know, he says that's made the difference. But like, if you look at like the underlying metrics, they kind of all look the same for Kyle Gibson that they've always looked. So I think it's just, you know, I mean, you get two on and two out and you get a fly ball to the warning track instead of a fly ball that goes over the fence. And it's like, that doesn't necessarily make you a better pitcher. Right. I know the result's better, but you still gave up the long fly ball. So at this point, I mean, I don't know. You just can't question it for the most part. Right. I started him. I've sat him sometimes when he's faced Houston or something. And even in those starts, he's been good. Good Seattle this week. I kind of expect him to keep pitching well at this point. And I would assume he'll be traded. He does have one more year on his contract, but Texas obviously not contending this year. I don't think Texas is going to contend next year either, right? I mean, I wouldn't think so. So I'll be interested to see where he ends up. I almost at this point kind of just want him to stay where he is, right? I mean, don't mess with him. So, I mean, any team could use a pitcher pitching to his level right now. So we'll see. I think he might get traded. Him and Gallo. Gallo. I really hope Gallo gets traded to the Yankees.
That short porch and right. Holy crap.
He can play center field, I think, there. It's
they
on,
need, on a yeah, you're right.
they
you're
need right. a center fielder. Put him between Judge and Stanton, right? Jesus. Righty, lefty, righty. Getting third in that order, he could go on a massive tear. So that's my prediction for Joey Gallo. I'm hoping so because I got him also on this.
Man, you put him in that stadium. That'd be nuts. Speaking of the Yankees, I just got to ask you, since you brought it up, a massive disappointment in Gleyber Torres.
Yeah,
are you like, what the hell's going on? Like,
I've
what
never
do you
been
think
a believer in Gleyber Torres. He's one of those guys. Like, I There's a few guys like this every draft season where I couldn't even tell you what his ADP is. I have no idea because I never noticed when he was drafted because I never considered drafting him myself. He was never a guy that stood out kind of in my model as just being like a good hitter. I know he had that run like it's against the Orioles, right? Where he hit like, I don't know, like 15 home runs against the Orioles.
He owned Camden Yards, basically.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I've been out on him. I mean, I never even use him in DFS or anything like that. So I don't really have a lot to say. Just not a guy that I like.
All right. The Guilds, who's doing very well in NFBC this season.
Yeah, he's a player.
Yeah, he makes kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke, but you guys know of anyone who can help predict injuries in baseball? This is getting crazy. Yeah, it is freaking bananas. But we got some other fun ones here. At Rob Wettig asks, who are some players who have been disappointing so far that you expect big things from the rest of the year? You could flip it if you want and do guys that have done well and you think will disappoint. Like we said, Soto. Is there anybody else that kind of stands out as a guy that's been disappointing you kind of really like for the second half?
Yeah, Joey Gallo got off to a slow start, but he's been picking it up. And he is a guy, you know, everyone's talking about the effect of the foreign substance enforcement on pitchers. I think it will have an effect on some hitters too, right? Like you said, this is kind of a universal thing. So Gerrit Cole, Trevor Bauer, they get all the Corbin Burns, they get all the headlines as aces who have seen their spin rate decline. But it's having an effect on baseball as a whole. We're going to see strikeout rates go down. And for a guy like Gallo, who's his only issue, right, is he strikes out too much. I think some of these hitters with a lot of raw power are going to be able to access that more often. Maybe a Tyler O'Neill, a Joey Gallo, perhaps a Franmil Reyes when he returns, right, where it's like, oh, if you can get the strikeout rate down from 33% to 28% because the ball's not moving quite as much and because you're swinging for the fences all the time, that could have a big impact because when you do make contact, great things happen. So you don't have to improve the contact rate that much to really kind of improve these guys' results. So I'm kind of looking at the big power guys, the guys with a lot of raw power as that are swinging for the fences every time up as guys that could really benefit from this. Joey Gallo would obviously be kind of top of that list, but you know, most teams have kind of a dude like this who has huge raw power. It's just a matter of how often can they get to it. I think we'll see them get to it more often. You know, this stuff's still going to affect relievers too. Like you forget that. I mean, almost half the at-bats come against bullpens and we're going to see some of these guys struggle more. So I'm kind of looking at some of those guys with a lot of raw power as perhaps producing more in the second half.
Yeah, no, that's a good call, especially those bullpens with the ungodly stuff that might not be so ungodly anymore. So
exactly.
That'd be really interesting to see. Brian Matthews asks, what are your thoughts on the Yerminator moving forward? He was doing great until Tony La Russa did the whole get off my lawn situation. Now it's been really cold.
Yeah, he hit that – I think that was against the Twins, right? He hit that bomb against – was it Astudillo might have been pitching there? Yeah, I picked him up a bunch of places when he was kind of going off. He was looking legit and has gone super cold. He's lost some playing time. His numbers look pretty bad to me against right-handed pitching, especially. I think he's still going to hit lefties well. But, yeah, I think I dropped him in TGFBI this last week, partly because I had Shohei Ohtani there, and only one guy can play utility, so it just wasn't worth it to hold it. But I'm not sure if he's going to get back to it. It seems like the league's adjusted to him a little bit, and I don't know how often he's even going to play against right-handed pitchers. I do think if you have him, you know, he's not in the NFBC, but if you are playing in a league where he is catcher eligible, there I would hold on to him, right? Because especially in a two-catcher league. But yeah, I'm not super optimistic on him going forward right now.
Yeah, I was fortunate because the util only aspect, I did not grab any of your main Mercedes, but he was torching it. But since that home run, hitting 165 with a .046 ISO and a 26 WRC+.
So yikes. I didn't realize it was quite that bad.
Yeah, it's been atrocious. So that ain't going to cut it, folks. And I'm with you. If you have other options, I'd probably move there for sure.
Yep.
Joe G asked a question. He has both Badu and Harold Ramirez as bench bats in deep daily mix roto, but has to drop one by Friday. Any preference? There are others that are free agents like Hayes, Wade, Choi. Basically, if you had to drop between Badu or Harold Ramirez, which one would you drop?
I'm definitely holding on to Badu in this situation. I'm pulling up Harold Ramirez here quickly.
He's been good.
He's been solid too, actually. He's been better than I realized. I know you mentioned him previously. I kind of, I guess, missed out on that a little bit. Yeah, super low strikeout rate, a little bit of speed. But I think Padu has the higher upside for me. I think he mentioned this was a daily league as well.
Yes, daily, yeah.
Which would further, I would prefer Padu in any format, but especially in a daily league because Padu still does get platooned. But against righties right now, leading off, Padu is like a really, really good play. Whereas I don't know if Harold Ramirez is ever going to be as good of a play on any individual day than Padu is when he's in the lineup. So sure. I don't really play in any daily leagues, but the platoon guys, right, depending on how deep your benches are, can be very valuable in those leagues. And Padu, I think Padu is really, really going to produce, especially against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, if you're one that believes Padu's power comes back, and we both believe it does, Pete, obviously, much more than me. He's all in. But I would stick with Padu as well. Like, I'm a big Harold Ramirez fan. I picked him up in a lot of places for cheap so far. So far, so good.
Yeah.
But I like
it. If there's a question in your mind, Padu or somebody else is probably going to be Padu for me.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I'll take that with a grain of salt, maybe.
Yeah, but you can't go wrong either way, I think, on that one. It's and he's got tons of options on the waiver wire. So have fun with that one, Joe. But Pete, that's going to wrap us up for all today. Right. Always a pleasure chatting, my friend. Remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on over at Run Pure Sports.
Yeah, over at runpuresports.com. We're primarily a DFS site. So, you know, if you're in the Discord or whatever, of course, willing to talk season long at any point. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, frankly, you know, sign up for us if you're just a season long only guy. That's not our primary focus. It's mostly DFS and betting as well. So really fun product over there if you want a taste of it. I'm on 4, sometimes 5 days a week, free on YouTube from at 4 Eastern time, sometimes 4:30 Eastern time with a couple of other good DFS guys. And that's free. So you can kind of check us out there if you like what we have to offer. Maybe sign up or not, whatever, but it's a free show. So check us out over there at runpuresports.com or just search Run Pure Sports on YouTube. And I do also have a First Look podcast breaking down DFS 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. It comes out every morning, kind of going either game by game, position by position, usually 30 minutes to an hour, depending on who my guest is on those days. So check that out. If you're interested, just search Run Pure Sports wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yep, go check him out. Pete is one of the more knowledgeable players out there. So very, very good stuff. And always a pleasure chatting with you. Always a good show. And okay. I look forward to doing it again sometime, man.
For sure. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 382 with Draft Cheat. Catch you guys later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.